This is Growing the Game with Ballsy, a podcast dedicated to growing the sport of football in Saskatchewan. Now, here's Ballsy.
All right, we'll start this edition of Growing the Game with Ballsy, speaking with one of our sponsors, former Rough Rider and Alouette, three-time Grey Cup champ, Paul Waldo from Royal LePage. If you're in the real estate game, give him a call, 306-502-5355. Well, Paul, wow, Chris Jones out as a head coach, GM, whatever else he does with the team. Yeah. He's got about five different roles, defensive coordinator, and that's
player personnel.
That's something we were always concerned about. We knew this guy would probably leave eventually, but he holds so many titles that now you got to fill a bunch of different roles.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head there. I mean, it's one thing to lose just one of those roles, and then to have to, like you said, replace a defensive coordinator, a head coach, a general manager, and the head of football operations. It's tough, and especially with the time. You know, if it happens in December right after the Grey Cup, and, you know, you have the new year to kind of get all your ducks in order and take some strides and have a solid plan to go hard into free agency, then I think you're generally okay. But, yeah, this is going to be a tough one, especially after the recent extension that he just signed. I think, I mean, obviously from a management standpoint, but, you know, from a fan base standpoint, you know, the team thought they'd be pretty secure.
You wonder if it caught the Riders off guard. 1 week you're signing him, and less than a week later he's off to the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think, I mean, you know, in any business would you, you know, hire somebody and, you know, pay them or potentially pay the money up front or make them, I mean, the engine that runs your organization, if you have any doubt in them sticking around. So, I mean, they must be shocked.
Yeah, for sure. Paul Waldo joining us here, three-time Grey Cup champ, also one of the panelists on our Rough Rider Radio Network broadcast. You know, there's so many moving parts here. Before we get to possible replacements, you know, you think about it. We got free agency coming up, if we have it coming up, because there's no CBA. And think about the guys that were thinking of coming back here because of Chris Jones or coming here because of Chris Jones. Mm-hmm. And you got to get a head coach in place, and I'm thinking one with credibility that guys are going to buy into.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, the one thing was Chris Jones coming in here was going to do things his way, and, you know, they'd really cleaned house from top to bottom, from, you know, medical staff to coaches to players to football ops people. And so, you sat there and you trusted that you were going to, you know, buy your time, because he was going to do things, his way, and there was a structure in the process towards being successful. And once again, it was going to be done his way. And so now to see, like you said, the head of the snake kind of turn leaf and head off somewhere else, it's going to be tough. It's almost like you really got to start over again.
You know, I do not want to ever hear anybody pick on the players for trying to get the most money that they can. First of all, I want to say this. Nobody should blame Chris Jones, an American, for wanting to go to the United States.
Awesome.
Because as an American growing up, you say to yourself, I want to be in the NFL one day. It's
Absolutely.
Like a kid on the prairies. You don't say,
Absolutely.
I want to play in the AHL or Europe. I want to play in the NHL, right, if you're a hockey player. So I don't begrudge him that. But for people to, you know, on one side of things say, well, players, you know, you're making enough money or you're getting greedy. You know what? There is no loyalty in pro sports, and we see that today.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, when you want to, everything's all about perspective, you know, in my opinion. And, you know, you look at players that are out here, you know, trying to get out of their contract that's paying them, you know, $48,000 or $50,000 a year. And once obviously they got to deal with the exchange, the currency in the States, and you get taxed, I mean, you know, it's $20,000 that you're lucky that you're going to be walking away with. And so you have a guy like that who's got to feed a family. He's a young kid and wants to obviously have dreams and aspirations of playing in the NFL. Not only is his salary going to multiply by 10, but once again, it's a lifelong dream. And, you know, I think people give players like that a hard time, but yet, you know, the coaches are able to go and take a promotion, take an upgrade when they're already making anything, you know, north of $500,000 to go on. I mean, I think it's pretty hypocritical. And once again, you just mentioned that, and it's exactly, you can't blame players for wanting to do the same thing. It's a double standard, in my opinion, and I've never understood it.
Tell you what, this throws a wrench into all the plans, doesn't it?
Sure.
Because you look at it, you've got this, you've got the salary cap now, and I think you're only allowed to have 11 coaches. As it stands right now, the Rough Riders have 10 coaches on staff, and they've got to fill a head coaching spot and a defensive coordinator spot. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. You know, if I look at names, Mark Trestman comes to mind. but he doesn't do defense. Paul Lapolice comes to mind, but he doesn't do defense. Craig Dickinson is a guy that I think is very intriguing. I've always said this. I think more teams should look at special teams coordinators as head coaches because they bring everybody together to play on the teams, and really, the teams aren't glamorous, so you got to get guys to buy in to do something they don't necessarily want to do, and I think that's what makes special teams coordinators great candidates for head coaching positions.
I mean, you're 1,000% dead on. The most important portion that you mentioned there is being able to get players to buy in. Special teams, obviously, it's the last of the three phases, and it's not a lot of glory. And like you said, you got to get guys to buy in and want to sacrifice their bodies at high speeds of velocity and intensity and chaos, essentially, and the special teams coordinators have always been able to do that. They're dealing with both sides of the ratios with, both American and national and imported players. So I think, it'd be a great choice and it'd be a great idea, I think, from a practical standpoint, where you got one job to fill two roles.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, people have been debating since this came down, what's more important for the Riders, to get a quarterback or a coach? I think you need to get the coach first before you can get the quarterback, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the coach will have a lot of merit in who the quarterback is. Not a lot of quarterbacks are going to want to come and play for a team that doesn't have a head coach, like anything, right? Especially when you look at the big names in free agencies, guys that are wanting to win championships and that are, like you said, towards the end of their careers. Guys like a Mike Riley, who is obviously the most coveted free agent heading into this year's free agency. So, why would you play for a team that doesn't have a head coach? So you're exactly right. I think it's got to be head coach first, and then you work from the top down.
If you were rolling the dice right now, who would you say is the next head coach of the Rough Riders, if you had to put money on it? We didn't mention another name. I know he's out there. Ken Austin's another guy that might be interested.
Yeah, and who knows what his situation is like. Obviously, just signing a contract with a collegiate team, I think, down south. I think he's back into college football, which might prove a little bit more stability for him, I think. Yeah. At the end of the day, I think the two names that you had mentioned are without a doubt the two best candidates in Paul Lapolice and Coach Mark Trestman. Obviously, they both have done it. Mark has won several championships and he's fit in because he's such a community-oriented guy. But with that being said, you need a defensive coordinator. You still need to find one guy that could do two roles. And, the Orlando Steinhauers are not there anymore. And, Devon Claybrook's obviously a head coach / defensive coordinator isn't on the market. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a challenge. And I mean, I guess Craig Reynolds and company's probably sitting there thinking the exact same thing we are and how they're going to be able to make this work.
Never a dull moment in Rider Nation.
No, not at all. And it's, like I said, you got to feel bad for that management. And a guy like Craig was really going to have to, roll his sleeves up now and potentially, deal with having to find a head coach. I mean, Craig's a really smart guy and he'll find ways to do what he has to get his team sailing in the right ship. But you just feel bad that he's going to have to do it on such a short timeline.
Well, we said the Chris Jones hire when he took the whole staff from Edmonton was a big hiring by Craig Reynolds. Yeah. This might be the most important one of his career right now as the president of this team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, with what he has proven in the last few years, and it's been a lot of optimism and things have been on the right track, and the team has competed really well and they've had 10 plus wins the last two seasons. So I feel like the momentum was building, right? And it was all the way up until potentially this year, where they would have had a really legit chance at winning a Grey Cup. So it's unfortunate that it seems like they're going to have to start from the bottom again.
Paul Waldo joining us here. Thanks for this, Paul, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Such a pleasure. Can't wait to chat some more.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is brought to you by Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan and the Concord Group of Companies. Brought to you by Wheel Estate. Got a travel trailer you want to rent out or rent one this upcoming camping season? Check them out at wheelestate.ca, and their rentals are backed by a $1 million insurance policy. Brought to you by Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, the home expert team. If you need a real estate agent in Regina and surrounding area, give Paul a call at 306-502-5355. And I'd like to welcome a new sponsor, Riviere Ag Seeds in Radville, Saskatchewan. If you're looking for pedigree, durum, lentils, peas, or chickpeas this spring, give Paul a call at 306-869-7629 or check them out online at RivieraAgSeeds.ca.
Well, as we roll along here, our next guest is the offensive coordinator for the Regina Thunder. That would be Stefan Ensign. Hey, are you interested in a Rider head coaching job?
Who wouldn't be? Isn't that not the most insane news?
Wow,
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's funny. There's never a dull moment in Rider Nation, is there?
No, like, just I'm honestly, like, I did not expect it.
Lots of moving parts. You know, like I said with Paul Waldo earlier, you got, you're only allowed to have 11 coaches now. Riders have 10 coaches. They need to hire a head coach and a defensive coordinator. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. At least that's how I understand the rules. And of course, you got the salary cap, although a lot of money is freed up now with the coach being out. And then of course, you got free agency, or do we have free agency with the CBA not signed yet? And you know, players that maybe wanted to come here because of Chris Jones, maybe they're looking elsewhere. A lot of moving parts.
You're exactly right. Like, it is wild. CFL's wild. It's good though. Like, I mean, I guess change and getting in the news, like it's beginning of January and people are talking Riders. That's not a bad thing, I guess.
Boy, times have changed. Speaking of changing times in junior football, when I played back in the day, I know leather helmets, did they even use footballs? But back when I played, you showed up to training camp to get in shape. Yes, we had some training throughout the off season. Like we trained a little bit in terms of running track, but we weren't where we are now in junior football. I was at the at your first winter camp, we'll call it. You have four sessions indoors in Moose Jaw. And how many kids you have out there, by the way?
Oh, we're in the 90s. Actually, I think we're over 100. We'd broken it, which was pretty good considering it was just the young guys, the rookies or the kids coming from high school. And then our first year, or I guess going into our second year, players from last year. So we did it a little different, having a little less kids. And I think it was better because there was more reps. In the past, we've kind of had, you know, 200 kids, 225 kids out there, and I think this was a little bit easier in terms of managing reps for the kids and evaluating them.
What is this type of situation, you know, where you have the four different kind of mini camps, so to speak? What does that do for you? Does it allow you to hit the ground running when you get to the actual season?
Yeah, like we don't stress the install part of it. Like it's not about putting in schemes. It's more about like just getting to know the players in a kind of more formal setting or I guess practice, typical practice setting. We like it, or I like it, in terms of seeing how the kids process it's not complicated stuff that we're putting in at these camps, but it's neat to see how they process it and learning different terminology and that kind of stuff, and just getting used to the pace that we like to run things at. So we use it for that, and then really you get to see who the athletes are. Like when we got kids running by other players, that's a big deal. So we kind of enjoy looking at that and seeing who we think can play at our level.
Yeah, and so did you have some eye openers there? Do you kind of like what you see in terms of the recruits coming in that you guys picked up in the off season, kicked the tires on?
Yeah, I was really impressed. The ton of kids. I mean, I'd hate to miss out on anybody, but we were really happy with some of the offensive linemen that came. They look great. Receivers as a whole were just terrific. Tons of athletes, tons of speed. Happy with the running backs. Well, I mean, I could just say I'm happy with all the positions, but it was really good. And then some big arms at quarterbacks that are some small town kids that maybe we weren't really as aware of we weren't as aware of them as we thought we maybe would be heading in. So they looked really good. It was just an impressive camp. It's good to see. I really like seeing, like, I just can't emphasize enough, a good opportunity for the young kids to kind of go against some of the younger, I guess they're becoming veterans on our team now, and seeing how they compete.
Rejig my memory. How long have you been doing this for with the Thunder?
Oh, too long, I think. I think I'm at, this will be my 12th or 13th year. I got to be 11 years in as an OC, I think, and I think two years, I guess, as the quarterback coach prior to that.
So how have the athletes changed?
You know what it is? It's exactly what you said. They're probably better. Like, they're doing football year-round, and that's the biggest difference. Nobody did that. You mentioned when you played. When I played, I think people were starting to work out a little bit. I wasn't, and that's probably why I never did get to play. But it's just a thing. If you want to be a part of a junior football program or any post-secondary football program, you got to be dedicated to what you're doing. And whether it's doing the Level 10 stuff through with us or Levi Steinhauer or any of the other off-season workout programs that people are involved in, the kids that make our team are dedicated. And I think that's the big difference. Anytime you're working out and trying to perfect your craft, you're going to run a little faster and probably be a little better. And I think that's what we're ending up seeing right now.
How have you changed in 12 years? How is this guy different than the guy that was just starting out with the Thunder?
You know what? I actually think about that quite a bit. The playbook is probably, I mean, we enter with the same amount of plays, but it's certainly different. What we've changed just as coaches is really making sure that our week-to-week game plan is kind of specific to who we're playing against. So I think we're a little bit better prepared than we used to be. I'm trying to be a little bit less or more, I guess, in touch with the players that we have and trying to communicate a little bit better. I think that's a key thing. I was always, kind of coached by the old school guys that were just really, really hard on guys. And I think that works to some extent, but just understanding that you need to push, but you need to show a little bit of love to these kids too. And that's been something that I've had to learn how to do a little bit. So
yeah, they don't relate the same way they used to, do they?
No, it's not the same. And like, it's good and bad. Kids know what they like and they know what they want. But it used to be when we played, and my coach would tell me what to. Bob Frolic would say, "Do this," or Greg Johnson or whatever, and you just did it, right? Like, that's how it was. And that's not the way these kids work anymore. They kind of need to know why. And that's a good thing, because I think in terms of as an offense that I can speak to, it lets you do a little bit more when kids maybe understand a little bit more about what they're doing. I'm not sure I had the same understanding. In fact, I know I didn't coming out of high school, how football worked. And I think these kids are better prepared that way.
I'm snickering because my son and I were having a little fun disagreement on him making the bed. He's like, "Why am I making the bed, Dad? I'm just getting back into it at night." And so I'm trying to tell him this. And then, I said, "Listen, make the bed because I told you so." He said, "Well, that's just lazy parenting. Tell me why I'm supposed to. So you're kind of right. You almost got to explain to them why they need to do things. And by the way, I said, "Listen, my grandpa always taught me this. You make the bed, and no matter how shitty your day is, when you come back, at least you did one thing right. You made the bed."
But it's true. Yeah. There's a place for sometimes you just got to do stuff too.
Yeah, that's right.
Sometimes it's life.
Yeah, I pay the bills. You do what I tell you to do. So, when you want to beat the best, you got to kind of study the best. What can you take from what the Hilltops do year after year after year? You do want to emulate their game because you want to be a champion. What do you have to do better or do more like them to beat them?
We 100% want to be like the Saskatoon Hilltops in the sense that they, our goal is to be the benchmark of the CJFL, and they're that. They win all the time. They are very well prepared. Their coaching staff does a tremendous job of making sure that they know week in, week out, kind of what the best things are that the other team does and how they can try to take those things away. You always hear about the New England Patriots. That's how they do things, take away option one and option two and make the other team win with option three. And Saskatoon does a nice job of that. They have terrific athletes. They work hard. They do all of that stuff. Those are the things we want to get to. And I think the only way you can get there is through, A, recruiting the best players we possibly can, and B, when we have them, doing our best as coaches to make sure that they're in the best possible position. And sometimes we do that, and sometimes, we have some learning to do too. So that happens as well.
Stefan Anson of the Regina Thunder offensive coordinator. What's your podcast again? In the Pocket, is that correct?
Yeah, In the Pocket with Reed and Stefan. That's right. With Reed Quest as well.
Yeah, and you just had, did I just see you had Ferguson Jenkins on or something?
Yeah.
So
who's cool.
Yeah, who's lining up your guests? Are you guys working the phones or what? Who's doing this?
We literally will, when we have a little bit of time, we like to fire off a message on Twitter to anybody. And this, he happened to have a book. Reed got him, so I'm assuming that's how Reed got him. But fired him off a text, and he responded. Not many people respond to us, so we kind of felt pretty good about this guy. I think he's a decent get,
yes,
actually.
Yeah, it is a really good get. I'm interested. Okay, so lastly, so you're a football guy. You love football. Who's your NFL team?
Chiefs.
Okay. Diehard. Oh, good. So I'm a I'm a Chargers fan. I was hoping it was going to be Rivers against Mahomes, but yeah, we pooped the bed. So now it's I want the Chiefs to win, my friend, but God, I just can't bet against Brady. I hate him. I hate Belichick because they're so good.
They won't win. Yeah, they never win. Like, this is I'm a Chiefs fan since Montana went there, so it's like 91, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's been nothing but disappointment from Lynn Elliott to, you know, everybody else on. And like, I don't think there's any Chiefs fan that actually believes they're going to win. Tom Brady is so good, but I want it badly, like to a point where it'll be hard for me to watch the game. But I don't know. They're saying it's going to be a blizzard or something like that. And I don't know how that's conducive to the amount Mahomes throws.
You got a young family. So do you watch the game alone? Like, cause I'm the type of guy that when they lose, like my son and I, we get decked out in the Chargers blue. I was wearing my Allworth jersey. He was wearing his Rivers jersey. And then he went to basketball practice and I just folded clothes in the fourth quarter cause it was over. But like, I get mad. It ruins my day. Does it ruin your day when Chiefs lose?
It ruins my week. So I'm starting to I reflect a little bit on how I'm like my dad. And the 1989 Grey Cup, when the Riders were losing midway through it, I was young and I was watching the game, and my dad turned off the TV, said we can't watch it anymore. I went upstairs and left. And my mom went and yelled at him, and I was allowed to watch the game, and he sat upstairs, and I watched it, and obviously it was the greatest football game of all time, and the Riders win, and I went up, and I told him, and he ended up, and that was before DVR, right? Like, so, yeah. But I'm like that now. Like, I literally, when things go bad with the Chiefs, because nothing ever usually goes good for them, and Chargers are the same. So you go right through. We're going through the exact same feelings all the time. It's pretty hard to watch. Like,
it's like a girlfriend. It's like a woman that you know. Oh, this time it'll be different, and she breaks your heart again. And she breaks your heart all the time. It's the same ending.
And you know it's going to happen. That's the sad part. Like, it's just, but you just keep coming back. And I think that's what's good. Like, in my heart, I want the Chiefs to win. I love how they're built. I love, and I want to watch the game and enjoy it, but I don't think I can.
Don't you want to see that Monday night matchup again, Rams and Chiefs? That was a fun game.
Badly. Like, it'll be phenomenal. To be honest, any of the teams left, and I like the Chargers too before that because they could score points. I like points. So I'm not real interested in a 10-6 game. I want to see if somebody can go out and kind of make something happen.
No, I totally agree with you. And you know, it's interesting because you got the three best offenses left right now, and then you got who's the best defensive coordinator slash head coach in the history of football. It is going to be intriguing. I can't wait. So you got you want the Chiefs, but you got the Patriots. That's who you're picking?
Well, I guess I'll say the Chiefs just because feel like I'm selling myself out if I don't say it, but I know who's going to win. I feel like I do anyway.
I want the Chiefs to win, but it's going to be the Patriots and Rams. That's how I got it.
There you go. That's exactly probably right.
Okay. Thanks for this, Stefan. Appreciate it, man.
Anytime. I appreciate it, too. Thank you.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is brought to you by Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan and the Concord Group of Companies. Brought to you by Wheel Estate. Got a travel trailer you want to rent out or rent one this upcoming camping season? Check them out at wheelestate.ca, and their rentals are backed by a $1 million insurance policy. Brought to you by Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, the home expert team. If you need a real estate agent in Regina and surrounding area, give Paul a call at 306-502-5355. And I'd like to welcome a new sponsor, Riviere Ag Seeds in Radville, Saskatchewan. If you're looking for pedigreed durum, lentils, peas, or chickpeas this spring, give Paul a call at 306-869-7629 or check them out online at rivierageseeds.ca.
Well, the calendar is flipped to 2019, as you know, we're 2 weeks in, and if any guy would be happy to see the calendar flip, it would be my next guest. That'd be Steve Bryce, head coach of the University of Regina Rams. First, before we get to that, you throwing your hat in the ring for the Riders head coaching job?
I'm just going to give you a giggle on that one, Mike. That's pretty funny.
Man, like I said to the previous two guests, the more things change, the more they stay the same. It's never a dull moment in Rider Nation, right?
No doubt about it. It's going to be a pretty interesting next couple of weeks.
How does that affect you? Like, you guys have to work with the pros. Did you work much with Chris Jones, or was more Jeremy O'Day and the other guys?
I worked a little bit with Chris. He was good to work with. He'd give me some tips on some players that they were looking at in camps and stuff down south of the border, and Guys still had some eligibility left. So, you know, we came up, he allowed us on the field, and they're doing camps, and he wasn't hard to work with.
So 2019 must feel like a breath of fresh air for you. That was probably, I would say, probably the worst year of your football life. Would I be correct in saying that?
100%. I can't imagine more wheels falling off a bus than happened last year. And just what a terrible way to have a season for a group of great fifth-year players, too.
Yeah. So what was your exit message for those fifth-year players? I mean, what could you say? What did you say?
When there wasn't really a lot to say. I mean, they endured so much together. All their experiences are going to just make them better people, better men. You're not going to have many years where so many things go wrong. And they dealt with it with class. They really did. And they persevered and they hung tough and they became a tighter group together because of it. So I think all of those things are going to make them better people down the road.
You just signed a couple of players here that I saw on Twitter. Just to tell us about a couple of these signings. One of them, a quarterback out of Calgary.
Yeah, Bryden O'Flaherty, really good kid. Might be the smartest kid I've ever recruited. 98% in the overall GPA, and he just scored in the 99th percentile in the SAT. So he's an extremely bright kid. You know, good size, good frame, really good arm, good mechanics. Throws the ball all over the field, and has pretty good feet too.
Excellent. And did you guys sign a D lineman too? Did I see correctly, or did I miss out on that?
Yeah, there was one today, Mitchell Lucconi. He was a high school quarterback in Prince George, and he went and he was the rookie of the year for the Kamloops Broncos. They moved him to defensive line.
Wow.
That's more of his natural position. He's gets off the ball real well, has a great frame. I mean, 6'4", 250 right now. He could carry another 25 pounds of muscle and not bat an eye, and he's going to do nothing but get quicker and stronger and build with some solid coaching.
Now, Steve Bryce joining us here from the U of R Rams, their outstanding head coach. Now, as I look at it here, it's an interesting era in Ram Nation. No Noah Pickton. A new page has been turned at the quarterback spot. You mentioned one of your recruits that you just signed up, but you know, you got a couple of guys coming in here, and Seb Britton, big tall quarterback, also out of Calgary, and then of course Josh Donnelly, who comes back from shoulder surgery, doesn't throw the ball much in practice, goes in against the Dinos and has a pretty good game in his last game there.
Yeah, what a great competition we have to look forward to this spring. We start our winter practices here in just over a month, our indoor practices and our indoor workouts, and it's going to be something else watching. You know, you got 6'5" Seb Britton, who's just got a cannon for an arm, and then he's going toe-to-toe with Josh Donnelly, who's just one of the most cerebral players you could possibly be around. I mean, he spends as much time watching film as Noah Pickton, and I think whoever wins, we're going to have an outstanding quarterback, and we're not going to skip a beat there.
Is he fully back yet from that shoulder problem?
I would say so. I mean, he followed all the protocols he was given. Or, you know, what an amazing recovery, too. Our first week of practice, he was only allowed to throw a tennis ball about 5 yards. And he went from there, and later in the season, like 8 weeks later, he started a game for us. And I thought he showed really well, especially considering he only had one practice with first team reps.
Now, this is going to seem like a strange question because you just had Noah Pickton, who is a diminutive. That's the word I'd use. And, you know, we'll talk about him in a quick second, but you got a guy coming in here, young guy. And the one thing that struck me watching him, I watch it on TV, is he's slight. He's slight in nature. And Josh Donnelly, I'm talking about here. Does that concern you at all? Are you looking for him maybe to beef up a little bit if he can?
Well, he's already started that path.
Okay.
And he was a little slight. I mean, you're not, and I didn't know, no Pickens, no Goliath either.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
But I would say that Josh is a little bit leaner. He's quite sinewy. And I don't think you're going to get many young quarterbacks who are going to outwork him in the weight room. He's there every morning at 7 o'clock. We're doing our running or sprinting workouts. He's back in the weight room every day at 3 o'clock. He's one of those guys you don't need to remind him where he's supposed to be. And he's also one of those kind of guys who's going to bring everybody else around him up and increase the expectations. You know, there's no accountability quite as solid as peer pressure, and he's the kind of kid who's going to apply peer pressure there.
Well, I know he took a big shot in that Calgary game right off the start and hung in there and threw the ball, so we know he can take the hit for sure. Steve, let's talk about your quarterback, your outgoing quarterback, Noah Pickton, signing that deal with the Argonauts. That's a nice feather in the cap for him and, of course, your program too.
Well, it sure is. I wish nothing but the very best for Noah Pickton. He's an outstanding young man. I had the opportunity to coach with him together before I coached him. He's just a super young man. He's very disciplined, very hardworking. His approach to the game has always been professional, even as an amateur. And he's going to do nothing but also get better and take coaching. And he does. He soaks it in. He's like a sponge. Any information he can take. And his time out there with Tressman, with Toronto before, he came back and you could just see his wheels were turning. And he was talking about progressions and simplified reads. And he loves the game of football. And he's going to make somebody very happy if they give him an opportunity.
Okay, so the CFL has made an effort to get their footprint into Mexico. They had their combine there. You know very well. You had a couple of players on your roster, Mexican players, including your kicker Eldo Galvin. Just talk about something that you probably already know about. There's some good talent down there in Mexico.
There is. We're actually hoping that next year we have three on our roster. I'm recruiting another one right now, and there really is. There's some outstanding talent. When you watch games like the U18 and U19 competitions by EFAF, and they beat Team USA, and Team USA is never a joke. I mean, it's some of the most established four-down football you can play through all of their select programs and through all of their nationwide recruiting for their national team. They put together an outstanding group of guys who, if you look at that group that Team Canada beat last year, all those guys are playing Division One somewhere. Mm-hmm. They're in NCAA, and Team Canada beat them, and Team Mexico beat Team USA. So that level of competition is right up there. There's 40 universities playing football in Mexico right now, and I think that the game itself is really growing, and there's a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of effort behind growing the at least right now the four down game, but maybe hopefully in the future the three down game in Mexico.
Now, I'm not against maybe potentially having Mexicans play in the Canadian Football League because it'll open up revenue streams and maybe get a television deal down there. But I don't want to see it at the expense of our Canadian kids. How do you feel about that?
I am 100% in agreement with you. I think that there's a tremendous amount of talent in youth sports. I think the game itself overall is growing in Canada very fast. The coaches are getting better. The players are getting better coaching. They're taking better coaching. The fundamentals at every position has improved drastically over the last 10 to 15 years in Canada, where you could say that there's positions that are on par coming out of high school in Canada and the U.S. So I would say that we don't really need to look too far. But, you know, a player here or there from another country, I don't think that's going to hurt any ratio. I would like to see the ratio change and favor Canadians more.
Mm-hmm.
We may see happen now because the new, the Alliant League and the new American Leagues that are starting up, we might have to see something switch because some of the best talent that has been in the CFL from the U.S., they might not be coming back. So we're going to see in the next year or two how this affects Canadian rosters, and it may have an impact for U Sport players and for the Canadian ratio.
And I don't think that's I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I just think people need to buy in that Canadian isn't always second fiddle. And I think that's kind of the mentality we have here that we have to get over at times.
I would agree with you 100%. I think there's unbelievable talent. I think if a lot of CFL fans came and watched some U Sport games, they'd be pleasantly shocked at how good the caliber of football is. It's very good. You're seeing some future stars playing. And they're hungry, they're excited, they're flying around. They're just as fast as some of their American compatriots, and they're just as strong in the weight room, and they've been just as well coached up. So I hope the Canadian part of the CFL grows because of this next year or two. I think that's something that would grow legs. We need to find a solution for this Toronto problem and the BC problem right now in the CFL, and I'm not sure going continent-wide is going to necessarily be the long-term fix. I think it might help. I think it might be one of the solutions, one of the cogs in the wheel. But I think that growing the Canadian part of the CFL, I think, is going to grow some legs.
And that's why we do a podcast like this called Growing the Game. And one guy that helped grow this game for his entire life was Jerry Orban. We were at a celebration of life here just recently. Our coach, our mutual coach, passing away at the age of 68, lost his battle to cancer. You were there, and you gave a nice speech. I just wanted to get your thoughts. He was my coach, but he was your position coach. Just talk about Jerry Orban and some of the things that he taught you that you're using now as a head coach with the Rams, which kind of must be kind of, was that weird for you? And I don't mean that rudely, but you're standing in front of a bunch of people that you you grew up with, that coached you, that were your teammates, and you're giving a speech about your former coach and now you're head coach of that program?
To start with, I think it was a tremendous honor when Jerry and Cindy asked me if I would speak at the funeral. I mean, it was one of the saddest and happiest hour and a half or so that I spent with Jerry at the end. But what a tremendous honor to be asked to speak about somebody who had played such an impact in your life. He was just a great role model. I would say that anybody who was fortunate enough to play for Jerry, they got an experience of an outstanding role model, an outstanding character person who just made everybody around him want to be better. And I think that was the theme, that he just brought people up and just made them better by him being present. His expectations were subtle in the way he pulled it out of you. I mean, he never was demanding. He was never a finger wagger. He was never a yeller. But, man, he sure made you want to run through a brick wall for him. And I loved his demeanor. And I thought if you could emulate some aspect of Jerry Orban, if he left an imprint with me, I'm a better person because I met and knew Jerry Orban. And like I said at the end of my talk there about Jerry, is I just hope to do him proud.
Well, you are so far as you've got this team into a new calendar year, and hopefully over the worst part of last year. It really was, geez, 2018 sucked. It really sucked, and it sucked for you in particular with what went on with your team and then your mentor passing away right at the end. He was on his way to passing away right at the end of the year, and of course passing away on January 4th, our good friend Jerry Orban. Thanks for this, Stephen. We'll talk to you soon.
No problem, Mike. Thank you.
Well, it's time to wrap up this edition of Growing the Game with Ballsy, but before we step aside, let's check in with John Ryan, the former Super Bowl-winning punter with the Seattle Seahawks. Of course, he played with the Green Bay Packers. He was signed briefly by the Buffalo Bills and also played with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and, you know, a great and proud University of Regina Ram alumni. John, first off, what are you doing now that you're not kicking footballs for a living?
I'm still punting footballs, just on my own, I guess. You know, I'm just down here in L.A. living with my wife and been working out, staying ready in case something happens down the road here.
What do you think's in the future for you football-wise? Do you have any irons in the fire? Where do you see your career ending up here?
I really don't know. You know, if something comes up, that'd be great. If not, you know, I feel like I've had a good 15-year run, and I'm happy. You know, I got some stuff going on here with obviously with my baseball team at in Portland, and then Sarah and I are working on some projects. So if nothing else happens, I'm pretty happy where it ended. But at the same time, I'm not quite ready to be done yet.
Do you have a drop dead date in mind in terms of when you might say, okay, that's it, I just got to move on to other things?
Yeah, I think that's kind of coming up in the next year. So I don't have an actual deadline date, but it's you know, I think you know when you know, and I think it could be coming up here, but we'll see. I think I still got some leg left in me and some good football left in me, so we'll see.
So do I. So me and your buddy Jared Livingstone, our mutual friend, I'm sitting there at Wascana Rehab the other day, and we're just shooting the you-know-what in his room there, and he said, hey, Ballsy, do you think John Ryan would ever come back and play with the Rough Riders? I said, who knows? Maybe I'll call him and ask him. Would John Ryan ever come back and play with the Rough Riders?
You know, never say never. There. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, there you go. That's good. Because I know we had talked in the past, and you said, you know, it might be cool to play with the Rough Riders, but that was before you got married and lived in L.A., right?
that's true. But, you know, I know that Sarah's not ready for me to be done with football yet either. So she definitely wants to see me play again. So okay. let's just leave that at never say never.
Okay, good. Well, I'll make sure he hears this, and then he can listen to that. Okay, John Ryan joining me here. Did I see correctly you went to the Golden Globes with your lovely wife?
Yeah, we were at the Golden Globes after party down at the Beverly Hilton, so it was a pretty cool experience.
Who are you hanging out with? What famous guys besides John Ryan and Sarah Colonna were you guys hanging out with? Besides you two, who else was famous kicking around there that you rubbed shoulders with?
We saw a lot of people. William H. Macy was there, and Sacha Baron Cohen, and Kate Beckinsale, and there's a lot of just different celebrities coming in and out of the after party. So it was cool. So
that's awesome.
I mean, a little bit of a fish out of water being a Regina boy in a Golden Globes party, but still pretty cool.
Yeah, let me ask. That's got to be on. Do you have, honestly, dude, do you kind of take us almost like an out-of-body experience? You step back and you say to yourself, I'm married to an actress slash comedian. I played in the NFL. I won a Super Bowl. And now I'm hanging out backstage with all, like, Sacha Baron Cohen, Kate Beckinsale. I'd die to be in the same room with Kate Beckinsale, man.
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty fortunate, and I've you know, never taken any of it for granted, and kind of lived it all to its fullest. So I'm you know, it's been fun for sure.
That was another installment of Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a story idea you'd like Michael Ball to pursue, please email him at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com.